By a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Warden Martin Subaru, Champaign's exclusive Subaru dealer, on Route 45 in Savoy. Online at wardenmartin.com. The phone number is 217-352-8910 for Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy.
Welcome to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Henry Frayne is at the controls this morning. In this hour of the show, we'll be talking with one of Colombia's most distinguished public intellectuals. He is an historian. He's also a librarian. He is, in fact, the man who oversees the largest public library in the city of Bogota. And it is arguably one of the most heavily used libraries in the entire world. We're talking this morning with Jorge Orlando Melo. He's here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois to give the Mortensen Distinguished Lectures, the 15th in a series, sponsored by the Mortensen Center for International Library Programs, which is based here at the University of Illinois, which has for many, many years been bringing librarians from all over the world here to the University of Illinois and providing training and information to librarians all around the world. The idea being that good libraries are important tools for improving people's lives, and that is certainly a theme that we'll be talking about here this morning with our guest, because there was some years back a very deliberate sort of decision made by the municipal government in the city of Bogota to develop the city's libraries, with the belief that that was a way that people could improve their lives. And indeed, that seems well to have happened. We'll talk this morning with our guest, and questions are welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let me also mention, by the way, that he'll be giving a talk on the subject Democracy and Libraries from Oral Culture to the World of the Book in Colombia. This is the Mortensen Lecture, and that will be taking place tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock in room 126 of the Graduate School of Library and Information Science. And I'm assuming that anyone interested in attending should feel welcome. 333-9455 is our Champaign Urbana phone number. Toll free 800-222-9455. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm very glad.
I read a quote where you were talking about your library there in Bogota, where you think that it could be the most visited public library in the entire world?
Well, as I compare the figures with the other figures I know of, like a public library of New York or the Pompidou Library in Paris, I find that the Luis Ángel Arango Library in Bogota seems to have higher inflows of readers. We are having about 8,000 to 9,000 readers every day, which is a very high amount of people, and probably doesn't talk too much about how good we are, but it shows a lot how needed that library is in Bogota. And the reason we had this amount of people is probably that no good libraries existed in Bogota. Now they do exist also, yeah. Other libraries.
Well, perhaps you can talk a little bit about how that happened. And it's my understanding that it was Enrique Peñalosa, who was at one time the mayor, not now, but it was for a number of years the mayor. It was he, and I'm sure that there were other people who supported him, although it may well have been controversial. He made the decision that if you looked at all of the kind of things that you could be spending money on in terms of civic improvement, that he decided that the library system was something where he wanted to put significant resources, and that it turns out, at least if you look at the volume and what people apparently say, the people who go and they use the libraries, it sounds as if it was a good decision. Was that in fact controversial at the time?
Well, somehow, in fact, the program had some roots a little bit before, because we had this Luis Ángel Arango Library, which is a library run by the Central Bank of Colombia, which is a very strange thing too, and this library was having all this immense amount of people. We had days in which we received 17,000-20,000 persons at the library. One day, one of the papers in the city said, the library yesterday had more people than the football game. And that was right.
Now, that's the kind of thing librarians would love to be able to boast about, I'm sure. More people than who went to the football game.
But then we talked to the municipality and told the municipality, well, look at that. People is crowding this library, but the reason is there is no more good libraries in the city. You need a good neighborhood library system. And we signed an agreement in 1995 with the municipality to develop this, to improve the system they had. They had very poor libraries that no one used. And that was one part of the controversy. They said, well, why do you tell us you need libraries if we have some libraries, no one is going there? And I remember I told them, well, it's like you have a restaurant and all the food is 15 days old. All the books you have over there are 5-10 years old. No one wants to see them. You have to have new books, good computers, music, and such. And the municipality started to plan about that. But then came in 1998, Enrique Peñalosa. Peñalosa was a very modern-minded mayor. He changed many things in Bogotá. He pushed for a public transportation system, which I think is also a model now all around Latin America, and public parks, and things that some people said were not really needed because they were not the priority for the poor people. There were saying people, well, there are people here which doesn't have a job, doesn't have enough to eat. Why are going to spend money in these things that look a little bit luxurious? And he said, well, no, the problem is, like the Chinese old saying, you cannot just give food to the people. You have to teach the people to get the food. And libraries are basic in education. And education in the poorest areas of the city were not of very high quality because they were being done without books. And those kids coming out of the public schools of the poorest areas of the city were coming out to high school without the good skills of reading that you develop. You have an independent reading in the library. And so he decided that it has to be done. And in 3 years, they built three huge libraries with very modern standards, with the best architecture that has been made in Bogotá for many years. In the poorest areas, just sometimes around shanty, in the middle of shanty towns, and the libraries were received by the people like they were the new temples. When you go over there, you find that the kids which usually moved in rather careless dresses, have been just recently taking their baths, and they come with, like if they were going to a mass. And because it became part of a new experience for them. And they are full of people, full of kids. Now in the Bogotá system, which has these three large libraries and about seven intermediate libraries that were also refurbished or built, and about 20 smaller libraries, more than 25,000 persons every day are going physically to these libraries, which are really the first good libraries in Bogotá, and the first libraries that you had some things that are more or less common, standard things anywhere in the world, like circulating libraries. People take books home. And so they changed the life of the people, really, as you were saying.
Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of thing that cuts across socioeconomic lines, that people of all, it sounds as if people of all ages and people of all economic levels use the
language. Yeah, I think that probably the heaviest group of users is more or less what you could call the lower middle classes or the upper working classes. Probably the very poor people, the people in the shanty houses are not with the abilities or the time or the possibility. But the next poorest group is crowding the libraries. And the other group that is not using these libraries very much, obviously, are the richer people because they have good books at their homes. They do not need them. So this is a very it's a program that has an important equality result for the people of this city.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the fact that you are the director of this, the Luis Angel Arango Library, the biggest one in Bogotá, and I guess it's still the biggest
library
in Bogotá,
yes.
And that it's somehow part of the National Bank. of the country of Colombia. Why is that? Why is the library under the National Bank?
I think it was a non-thought development. I mean, an unwilling development for the bank. In fact, the bank was by law the monopolistic buyer of gold, and that led the bank to accumulate a lot of pre-Columbian figures in the 20s and 30s of the 20th century, and it became, finally, they found that they had a good collection of pre-Columbian art, and they opened a gold museum, which is very well known all around. They have 30,000 gold pieces over there exhibited, and they discovered that this cultural activity was very good for image and for other things. And so in the 50s, they decided to allow people to use their internal library. And as people crowded this library, they kept increasing the size of the library, increasing the size of the collection, so that by 1990, the library had 2,000 reading places and was the largest library in Colombia. And now it's probably the largest library in Latin America.
Mm. One of the things that I have noted is that apparently within recent decades, maybe within the last half century, really, there has been a pretty significant increase in literacy in Colombia. How did that come about, and where does that stand now?
Well, I think that happens in all Latin American countries. That was a pressure, I think, of civilization, of global economy. There was a period up to the 1920s when probably you could function rather well if you were a peasant without reading. But when people start moving into trade and industry, you need to have all the workers able to read. And so all the Latin American countries started improving somehow, not very much, but improving somehow the elementary school system. And anyone is now going to school at least 3 or 4 years, so they learn the basic skills of reading. So today, Colombia has a full coverage for the small kid, for the kids between 6 and 10 years old, something like that. And I think the same happens in all Latin America. And that, obviously, is one of the explanations of this interest in libraries. Somehow, Colombia is arriving today to the situation the United States arrived 150 years before, when people became literate. And so libraries were needed for those parts of the literate people that didn't have the money to buy the books.
Yeah. Our guest in this part of Focus 580, Jorge Orlando Melo. He is the director of the Luis Angel Arango Library in Bogota. It is the biggest library in the city. In fact, he says it's apparently the biggest library in all of Latin America. And he's here visiting the campus to give a talk. This is the 15th annual Mortensen Distinguished Lecture, sponsored by the folks at the Mortensen Center for International Library Programs. And he'll be talking about democracy and libraries in Colombia tomorrow afternoon, 4 o'clock, in room 126 of the Graduate School of Library and Information Science. Questions here on this program are also welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Can you give some examples, specific ways in which you think that the system of libraries and the opportunity for people to use those resources has yielded some sort of concrete result?
Well, there are things that cannot be evaluated very soon, and I think libraries are one of those. Some different type of things have happened into the Bogotá educational system, but at any rate, Bogotá has improved very, very rapidly the levels of the results in the national proofs. Now Bogotá is usually about 20% above the national media for the tests of schools in 4th degree or 9th degree. And part of that, I think, is because people are using books a lot in schools now because they have the books in these public libraries. The other thing is that you can guess that when you go to one of these neighborhoods in which you have a lot of kids that do not have anything to do, and you go to the library, you find 300, 400 of them just looking into good books, something has to be happening that is not so bad. And obviously we are having that also in other areas of Colombia. We in after this experience in Bogotá, and we were having all these libraries all full of people, proving that people wanted to go to libraries if they were good, if they had computers, if they have TVs or videos and music and all these type of things, because these are modern collection with media, what type of media. So we proposed the national government to try and do the same in the small towns of Colombia. And the government accepted it. And 3 years ago, it started the program for supplying basic collections, 2,000 to 3,000 books, but new books and good books, to all the small villages of the country. And but by now, about 600 villages have received these collections, and I have been in some of them. And it's amazing. In some of them, you have a theater group, because the students started coming over there, the kids of 12, 13 years old, in a fishermen community in the coast of 3,000 persons, and then have, and one of them, in this one I am thinking of, the 3,000 inhabitants community in the Colombian coast of fishermen, there were two theater groups over there that had been formed in the library. In some of them, I have found that they decided to do a literary periodical or things like that that never happened before. In some of these places, really, the computer of the library is the first computer that arrives into the town. And so there are many, many changes. And I could talk about a lot of small stories that happened in which the life of people may be changed in an unexpected way. I remember a letter of a user of a library in a small place, very much ridden by violence. And she was saying, she was a letter to one of the librarians, a small, this probably non-professional librarian of the small library, saying, "I want to thank you very much because my daughter was very depressed after the killing of my father, his grandfather, her grandfather. And she was a 3 year or 4 years old girl. She didn't talk, she didn't speak, she didn't laugh anymore. And I went to the library because someone told me that they could do something to entertain her. And they read over there the book called The Grandmother of Above and the Grandmother of Below. This is a German small kid books. And she was fascinated, and she kept asking the librarian to read again the book. And and you lent me the book to take home. And I read the book for two or three times to her. And she became interested. And I had to go to the library again. And you lent me more and more books. And she now is again reading and again laughing and talking and telling the story to anyone. So in a situation in a country in which you have violence, then you find that someone finds in the book the ways of somehow living with violence and overcoming the angst and difficulties of violence. I think there are a lot of stories like that that make it worthwhile to think that libraries still have a lot to offer in that type of situation.
Yeah. Does the government get at all involved in the business of trying to shape or select or restrict content, what it is you have, or perhaps because a lot of people, as you say, come to the library because that's a way for them to get on the internet and use the computers that way, place any sorts of limits on what people can do?
No limits have happened. We have been very happy that no one has discussed that problem. No one is asking that the selections go in one way or another. Of course, you have in these 3,000 books, obviously the Bible, but you have also the Communist Manifesto, and someone probably will want to check still what was that, and you have novels, and sometimes we have maybe we were careless in some cases. We send a lot of movies, and some of the movies were quite strong. Some of the movies on Colombian violence, like one called Rodrigo Day, which was a movie on drug dealers and killers, and or one called The Flower Seller, something like that, who was a retelling of one of the Anderson story, but in the ambience of violence of Medellin. And one librarian told me that she had lent that book to a very old lady that came and was fascinated with this nice story about the Anderson story. And when she came back next Monday, she said, "You have lent me the most awful movie I have ever seen. You shouldn't have these movies here." And so we had to say, well, you have to rate and select what you lend to some users or to inform the others what are they waiting to get. So the censorship issue has not arisen, and I am very happy about that, because then I think it's not the problem of the library just to select, it's the problem of the readers to be able to select.
Yeah. Do you have funding problems? Is the funding, do you think, adequate, and is it prime? I know you've gotten some private, you actually even got the Gates people gave some money, but I'm assuming that most of the money that comes to support this system does indeed come from the government of Colombia?
Yeah, it's the system of Bogotá, more or less the buildings and the buildings were about $20 million, and they were paid by the municipality fully. And the management now is fully assumed by the municipality. In the national program, this program for small towns and villages, the central bank supported the first stages of the program, but now it's fully supported by the national government. The Gates Foundation gave us a prize to Bogotá, $1 million for improving the technology, the technological aspect of the system in Bogotá. So the funding now is more or less good for what's being done. I think it's still very short. Very much more could be done. But we are worried it's just for the possibility of that funding to be kept in the next years. The government is going to be a new election in 1 year. We don't know how much is going to change the type of policy. New Minister of Culture probably is going to come in. But we hope that after the community has discovered how good our library is, probably the Ministry of Culture will keep the program going on and will give them at least an adequate funding, not a very rich funding, but at least it's not. Libraries are very cheap when you compare them. I used to say to compare in Bogota the cost of the full system, and it's more or less the same that one or two bridges in this highway interchange or something like that. Is more or less all the full system in Bogota was cost less than one or two bridges in the highway interchanges in the city.
And I assume that there is some, the patrons are charged some kind of fee to use the library?
No. It's fully free. There's a nominal charge when you get the card. It's about $1 for the full year in the public city. Really, all the services are free, except copying and photocopying and things like that. But usually, everything is free. The circulation of movies, for instance, or records is free. So I think they are in. That's how it should be, for at least for the moment.
Yeah, our guest in this part of Focus 580, Jorge Alondo Melo. He is the director of the Luis Angel Arango Library in Bogota, Colombia. It's the biggest in the city, and probably, he says, one of the biggest in, maybe the biggest in Latin America. And when you take a look at library use there, it may be one of the busiest libraries in the entire world. Quite a highly developed library system in the city of Bogota. He's here to talk in the folks at the Mortensen Center for International Library Programs have brought him here. This is the 15th annual Mortensen Distinguished Lecture, talking about democracy and libraries in Colombia, tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock, room 126 of the Graduate School of Library and Information Science. Anyone interested should stop by. Questions here, too, are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Colombia, it's true. One of the things that's true in Colombia, and I know is true other places in Latin America, is it's a place where there's great stratification. Most of the people are poor, and the wealthiest people are a small segment of the population, and there's a big gap, and that has driven political violence, and there has been connections between that and the illegal drugs trade. Do you think that an institution like your library and like the system that you have in Bogota can actually do something particularly to address the fundamental inequalities that you see in Colombian society?
Yeah, I think obviously you cannot expect that libraries are so powerful as to run against very deep social and structural problems of the country, but they can help a lot in some aspects. And I think one of the basic problems in Colombia is the problem of the quality of education, the difference quality of education. In fact, since the 1930s, 20s and 30s, as the public system started to become a little bit overcrowded because of the social changes, before, let's say, 100 years ago, you have this very highly stratified society. But then in the last 100 years, the stratification is basically economic. And so it's what you can do. And what you can do depends a lot in your education. And so the what happened, in fact, was that the highest groups of society developed a private educational system very well endowed, in which they go to very good universities of international standards and high schools of very good quality, while the public system was growing very rapidly to because the ambition was to cover up the full population who passed from having half a million students in the 1920s to have 8 million students now. This high increase was made somehow without the possibility of improving quality. And the public universities, which also are very important, received anyone that can pass a test. They are blind to all kind of consideration, which I think is very good. But then who passed the test? The test is now, the universities are, the public universities, which are the free, no-fee universities, are full of the students of the best, what you could call the students that cannot pay the private universities, but come from good, usually good, private schools. The middle class students are crowding the public university, and the people coming from the working classes or from the other areas, when they finish high school, they want to go to the university, but they usually do not win the place because they do not have the abilities and the knowledge and the level of there are small things in life, just the ability to check internet may be quite important now, the speed with which you find information. And that depends very much on how you use your university, your school library, or how you use books when you were 10 years old or 12 years old. When you discover the book, when you are 15 years old, when you get the textbook, and you go to the school just to read the textbook, but you don't have the experience of looking for information, then you do not have the abilities to answer this this test for entry into universities. So I think this is one of the things that libraries can help to improve the quality of secondary and basic education for the lowest groups of society, which are 60% or 70% of the society, the people going into public school systems. And I think that's one thing. The other thing is obviously the adult population. There's a lot of people in Colombia that left school, that went to 3-4 years of school, and they have to retrain themselves every 2 or 3 years. I mean, the economy is changing so quickly, the technology is changing so quickly. So if you do not have libraries, they kept in a world that is 20 or 30 years behind, except by the information that comes through TV and radio. But it's basically another type of information. So I think libraries really work very much against today works basically against social discrimination and inequality.
Yeah. Do you actually have established working relationships with the public schools and with people who teach in public schools?
Yeah. What I think one of the first things that we recommend to all of these small libraries is just you have to bring all the teachers and all the students to make the tour of the library to see what they can use over there. And our library in Bogotá, as we were receiving a lot of students of elementary schools, and we used to have workshops for teachers so that we'll teach them how to use the library, how to send the students to do useful, so that the library is not just to check a encyclopedia, which was what most of them were doing 10 years ago, sending the kids to the library saying, you have to check this information, and you have to check it over there in that library and show me that you... They even made us to sign a paper proving that they had gone to this library because they thought it was important to go over there. But they sent the students to do something that was absolutely useless. And so we used these workshops to try and improve the use of the library. Now the library has changed a lot. It's more a university-used library because the existence of all this system in Bogota. But... you have to work basically with teachers and schools because they are really the main users of the system and the people that is going to use it in a more effective way and getting more of that use. But of course, the other group that is the people that left the school and they still dream with learning something.
Yeah. How heavy is your internet use at your libraries?
Well, in some of those of Bogota, is very, very heavy. When we opened an internet-free room in 1996, something like that, which is very early in Bogota, was the first one in Bogota, the only one that was public at the time and free. And it was crazy because I wondered what they were wanting to do because we opened at 8 in the morning. And when we opened at 8 in the morning, there were 200 persons just waiting in the line and they will run through all the stairs to get to the computers, to the internet computers. And at 8:10, all the reservation for the day up to 8 in the night were filled. No one coming at 8:15 were able to get a turn a reservation. And I asked the people in the door, well, when at what hour they start the line? And they said it has been days in which people comes here at 3 in the morning to start the line. And I wonder, well, what kind of information they want to get as to be able to that? We never do. But anyway, the new libraries have usually 60 to 70. We have about 15 computers at the time, which was not a very large amount. But this new, one of them has 100 computers in internet, and they are always filled. And the other half have, I think, about 60 anyone. And the small libraries in the neighborhood have eight to 10 computers in the adult room and 8 computers in the children's rooms. They are always filled with people. People is always checking internet. And so probably this is going to the pressure is going to increase for a while and then decline while people get more internet at home. Yeah. But now it's a service that is a necessity for the people in places where they do not have a computer at home.
Do you know, generally speaking, what kind of information people are going after?
Well, at the libraries where you have more or less the traditional type of readership, you have a 15 to 20% are people reading literary works, and about 15% are reading social sciences. Computers, obviously, are now about 20%, 25% of the users, people looking into computing and programming and things like that. And the... And general information, general encyclopedic information, the reference type of things. In internet, I think that a lot of the uses, they start being uses of chatting and getting basic information, and probably sometimes you have uses that are not very welcome by the administration, and you try to reduce that. I mean, the just people playing games or looking into X pages. But then they come to a normal use of checking information for doing homeworks and for the school and things like that. I think internet is not still something that has the wealth of cultural materials that you are going just to enjoy over there. But I think chatting is something that has become social life for many people.
Well, we have a caller here to talk with someone in Charleston. Let's do that. Line 4. Hello.
Yes, I have a comment and a question. I think that libraries are the key to the future. And my love of reading goes back to when I were 10 years old. I think I heard your guest say, or state that age. But nevertheless, I found in the trash Edgar Rice Burroughs' Tarzan of the Apes. And I read that, and my dad would stop me from reading now and then and make me go outside because I was spending too much time indoors. But nevertheless, that began my journey with reading. And my question is, do many people come to your libraries to actually read, such as classics and encyclopedias and dictionaries and such as that? Is there a population that comes to the library for those purposes?
Yeah, I think that the public is very varied and comes to many things, and the circulating books, the books that people takes home usually have a larger amount of novels. For instance, kids will go back into the same traditional things and take home Lewis Carroll or Julio Verne or Emilio Salgari, the Jack London, and the adult readers will take all the literature, but in the physical library, the people coming into the library and going into the reading rooms, usually they tend to go into shorter reading materials, more reference type of information, because it's not so comfortable to read the War and Peace in a library. You have to come too many times, so people takes that home. But I think the libraries are for many people really the places where, as you say, they start the journey of readership. And I have found, for instance, very interesting and strange people in the libraries. That, like in any place, we have a beggar that every morning I see it in the library. And sometimes I used to see him in the afternoon begging in one of the corners of the city. He used to read all the mornings in the library novels. I realized he was reading novels. And then probably he paid the lunch at the library with what he got in the afternoon. And then he went begging in one of the corners of the city. And we had a shoe shiners and things like that come into the library and find the literature that helps them to dream of different things of their difficult lives. And I think that all the type of materials are read over there.
Yes, could I say one last thing?
Sure.
Earlier in your conversation, I meant to include this prior, but the range of subject matter in your library included the Communist Manifesto. Did I hear that right?
Yes.
Yes. Well, wonderful. There's the spectrum.
Yeah. I think we have we have very good collections of in our library. Of course, we have it's a general library. It's a type of university library, and of course, you will have all type of books. And obviously, now some of these materials that were very anxiously looked for in the 1970s in Latin America are a little bit outdated. Now the people is going to look for other things, and so they are a little bit getting dust into the... I think the Marx-Engels full works are more or less getting dust, except for one or two intellectuals making history of the ideas, of political ideas in Latin America in the last 50 years. But anyway, we have to keep them, and I think it's part of the important... of the thing that have to be available to anyone over there.
We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, and our guest for the program is, as I said, Jorge Orlando Melo. He's director of the Luis Angel Arango Library in Bogota, Colombia, a very large library indeed, and the city has a very large and highly developed library system with millions of users every year, and he said, as we discussed at the beginning of the program, that he thinks that it may be that his library is the most visited public library in the world, at least when you make comparisons between libraries in places like New York and Paris. If you look at the numbers, indeed is a very heavily used library. He's here visiting the campus as visit sponsored by the Mortensen Center for International Library Programs. Columbia certainly, for some time now, has had difficulties. There has been violence driven by both politics and by the drug trade. And I'm sure that for outsiders, that's the perception that Colombia is a very dangerous and indeed it can be a very dangerous place to live. What can you say about life in Colombia these days and whether you think that in recent years it has been getting better and do you have some sort of optimism for the future?
Well, I have some optimism for the future because I think there are signs of some changes, but still the situation in Colombia is quite complicated. We have all this drug dealing situation in which the continuous demand for drug is getting a lot of Colombians to work for supplying that demand, and that gives a lot of money and power to people that is willing to use violence to get their ends. So this is one problem that is going to probably is going to take a lot of time to be really solved. We have also about 50 years of a confrontation with a communist ideologically led guerrilla created in the periods of the 1960s when somehow there were the dreams that social change could be brought through violence in these traditional countries, and that failed. Anyone now sees that social change gets is best obtained by other democratic means, by social participation, by the improvement of the conditions of the workers, and so on. And so still these guerrillas, especially because of the power of the impact of drug dealing, have been able to survive even without much of support of the population. Violence is something that you see that you lived as a highly I don't know how to say it. I mean, it's not something that you see in your daily life if you live in some areas of the country. Bogota, for instance, is a city which a very low level of violence. It's one of the cities in Latin America with the lowest amount of homicide and murder. But there are pockets of life in Colombia where you have all this infighting going on, basically in the countryside and in some middle town cities of the country. But Bogota is a country with the lowest amount of murder than many American cities. So it's a very compartmentalized type of violence, sometimes makes it that some people in towns do not care very much about. They do not do much about. They think it's a problem of the peasants other ways, but we are not affected very much by that. And it's rather strange because the Colombian economy has been more or less growing continuously in the last 50 years. No, it's not a stagnant economy despite this violence. And also this development of social services in cities, basically, because of these problems of the countryside, has been quite effective in the last 50 years. I mean, education has improved. Now we have this good library system, but which is extending almost to all towns, all middle and small towns of Colombia. And many things have changed for the good, but at the same time, we keep having something that looks like it's not going to be very easy to solve. Now the government is making an effort that has been done before to negotiate with some of the armed groups a kind of disarmament and to give them some amnesties and things like that. And of course, those type of dealings have a lot of problems, and we don't know what's going to come on. Mm.
You say that you're expecting that there will be a change of government. Is it next year?
Well, no. There's an election in next year. Mm-hmm. The present government ends the period next year, so there's going to be an election. But the Congress has just changed the constitution so that the immediate re-election, like in the States, is going to be possible, and the present day. The actual president Uribe now is probably going to be a major candidate.
Run and again and probably will.
And he probably will win the election. Is ahead, very much ahead in the surveys.
Hmm. And that, so you shouldn't expect that the government policy towards towards what you do.
Well, the thing
is
that,
not going to
the thing is that I have the feeling that that was not a program that was very highly in the mind of the president. I mean, he has other things to care about. Was very high in the mind of the Ministry of Education and the Ministry of Culture, which was rather unexpected. Usually, those ministries had other problems. They wanted to teach teachers and improve the quality of, or just to solve the problems of the schools. But now these two ministers really. To ladies, they took very at heart the program of libraries, and they supported fully for these 3 or 4 years. And even if the president is reelected, we do not know who is going to take charge of these ministries. And still, the program is not so well part of the institutionality that is above the persons running these specific ministries. They can switch a little bit the priorities and stop the things. But I think that is almost on the point in which it's going to be a program that is not going to be easy to stop it.
Yeah. Are there things that you would like to do but that you can't because you don't have the money?
Oh, well, of course, there are many things. One obvious thing is that I think that the connection between all the libraries through internet, the access to internet of all the libraries, in many of the small towns, there's no electricity yet. All the electricity operates only 2 or 3 hours in the day. Other areas do not have a connection to internet, although it's improving rapidly. And so all of these libraries, small libraries have in rural areas and villages have one computer. I would like to have at least 5 or 10 computers in any of those places. In some places where private persons or private foundations have given computers, you have people in the countryside filling rooms with 10 or 15 computers. So I think computers are a requirement. But I always say that computers shouldn't arrive in these areas without books. That the idea that the computer is a replacement of the book is a very dangerous idea in this type of societies, because they were societies in which people didn't get in the culture the tradition of the complex abilities of reading a book. And when you go straight from oral culture to the computer, to internet, without passing through the book, the habits, the forms you look into the information, the forms you read, the critical attitude toward the information is very difficult, because it's very different, because internet tends to lead you to a very switching type of rapid information. And so I think that the person that is able to read a good novel is a much better user of internet. But I think both should go together. But libraries and computers should go together to the countryside, to all these places. And so I would like to have money to have more computers, more books, and probably to improve the quality of services. We are working with non-professional librarians. Obviously, there's no professional librarians for such amount of libraries in Colombia, and people going to universities and graduating as librarians go into the universities or university libraries. They do not go to these small towns. So we'll have to improve very much the training way, the type of training, short-term training that these people is going to receive. And having a very good help, I think, of the Mortensen, because many the people that are coming from Colombia to this program here are seeing in a real operating way the American libraries, which have, I think, the best experience and the best tradition for solving the practical problems of getting to people, which we are learning by doing it.
Yeah. Just as sort of a side issue, we're talking about the fact that there are good private schools, and that people that have the money can send their kids to them, and there are good high schools and universities, and perhaps that the public school system is not as good as it could be, but better than it has been in the past. Do, particularly, I guess I'm thinking of public schools, to what extent do they have internet access?
Well, Bogota, I wanted to make a point before is
sure.
that because of probably the importance of upper middle class people in the government for a lot of time, clerks and such and such. The public system of universities is a very good one. So, the public universities, and which are very cheap, and which were more or less geared to the lower ranks of the bureaucracy, kids are very good, and so. But those even teachers, high school teachers, will send the boys to private schools in high school and then to the public university. So the problem is basically the different quality in basic education.
Elementary and
second. Say yes. Yeah. And then you were telling me about the...
I wonder, do public elementary schools, how much are they wired?
Some of the things that happened in the last period... Some of the system have improved very much. In Bogota, in the same administration that created these libraries, created a network for the schools, and about 20,000 computers were put with internet connection in the public schools of Bogota. But I think, which makes I believe that in Bogota, maybe today the schools may have 30,000-40,000 computers connected to internet, but probably that could be the whole computers in the country. Yeah. So yeah. There will be towns in which there's no computer. So the inequality is very high, and that shows in Bogota in the fact that when you make when you look into the figures of people going outside of the country to do, for instance, graduate studies in the States or in Europe, 60-70% of the people getting the winning the scholarships are from Bogota.
Well, there we're going to have to leave it with our thanks to our guest, Jorge Orlando Melo. He is director of the Luis Angel Arango Library in Bogota and is here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois. We'll be giving the 15th annual Mortensen Distinguished Lecture. This is sponsored by the Mortensen Center for International Library Programs tomorrow afternoon at 4 in room 126 of the Graduate School of Library and Information Science, talking about democracy and libraries in Colombia, his country. Thank you very much.
Thank you to you.
Support for the show comes from the Infant Parent Institute with offices in Champaign. The Infant Parent Institute is a private clinical practice and research institute dedicated to supporting the mental health of young children and their families. Information on the web at infantparent.com. The broadcast also made possible by Eastern Rug Gallery, offering a wide selection of guaranteed hand-knotted Oriental and Persian rugs of every size and color combination, from new to antique, to complement any decor. Eastern Rug Gallery, 1402 South Neal Street in Champaign. That's it for us. Up next, it's the Afternoon Magazine with Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today at noon, Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich will outline his all-kids health insurance proposal. We will join Illinois Public Radio for coverage of the governor's speech. Later this afternoon, in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll talk about dogs with John Katz. December wheat trading at 324, that up 3/4. March, 338 and 3/4, up 1/4. December corn, 199 and a half, unchanged. March, 212 and 3/4, unchanged. May, 221 and a quarter, unchanged. December corn, 245 and 3/4, down 1/4. November beans, 570.